Hi, and welcome to the Webster University Geneva podcast. I'm Juliana Sandholm-Bark. In March 2018, I launched Meet the Artist, a public lecture series, an event where visual artists are invited to talk about their work and their creative process. Our program of lectures is available online through the link wcci.webster.ch/events/meet_the_artist. With us today, we have the amazing Arantxa Cedillo. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Juliana. Very nice to be here with you today.
It's really nice to have you here also. You gave a really nice presentation that was perfect for students and everybody else who was present in the room because you made it interactive, and I think it was really highly appreciated. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So you're currently based in Geneva, and you spend many years working as a photographer for various organizations. You still are, of course, working for organizations now as a photographer. But for many years, you were traveling. And I was going to ask you, my first question is it strange to be stationed in Geneva after so much traveling?
I'm actually very conscious that living in this part of the world is a bit different than living in somewhere in Asia, where I was before. Mm. But it's a new phase in my life, in my work. I moved to Switzerland 5 years ago. I became a mom of two beautiful children. I have done some organizational work. I work in communications, currently with an NGO. And I split my time with doing some of my photography still as well. So it's just a matter of like trying to find the balance and working with the circumstances. Mm-hmm. But I'm still happy to be in this part of the world. I think it's a great environment, and there's many stories that you can tell also here in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. So you're from Madrid originally.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
So going back in time a little bit, you studied in Madrid and a place, I don't know where it is on the map, Castellón.
Yes, I studied my master's in Castellón.
Castellón. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I don't know Spanish, so I'm trying. And you pursued all sorts of degrees. It was really interesting to discover, right? Educational science, peace and development studies, and then finally documentary and fine art photography. Mm-hmm. So on paper, it almost sounds like you came to the visual after covering all these other interests of yours. So photography eventually found you, or you found photography. Is it how it happened? Because on paper, it looks like this is how it went, but is it like that? Or
indeed.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like that. It was circumstantial. So as you mentioned, I came from studying educational science in the university. Then I was always very curious to tell people's stories. So social work interests me, mm-hmm. and vulnerable communities. And this is something that I have developed throughout the years as a photographer. And it was just the time that I was traveling and I took a camera and I fall in love with it. So I started to pursue a career as a photographer and left everything else that I was doing at that time. Mm-hmm. And from then on, it just became my passion and my job at the same time.
And I'm very curious about New York, your time in New York, because I spent a lot of time in New York as well. So this is like very subjective.
Great.
But so you did a degree in documentary photography and photojournalism at the amazing International Center of Photography. And I was just curious to hear you speak about the pedagogical approach, if there was a big difference between the education you had in Spain, and then was it a culture shock in any way to have, in terms of the pedagogy that was used, in terms of the mindset, you know, that your teachers had at the ICP, with regard to how they taught photography?
Mm-hmm. In the school, the majority were very good experiences, amazing teachers. And as I say, there were some photographers, they just show you their techniques, the way they work. Mm. But we worked together. And that was something very prestigious at that time, to work with certain renowned photographers, mm-hmm. and see how they see the world and how they experience it, and to teach you the way, their techniques, and how they approach their projects. For me, was more about the learning how do you research on a subject, how do you make it happen? Mm-hmm. How do you follow up? How do you complete a project?
Mm-hmm.
And how? What do you do with it in the end? The one thing that normally schools don't teach you, which I saw it as a gap, is how do you sustain yourself financially as a photographer in a very competitive world.
Right.
And this is something that you might have some learning at school, but it's something probably you learn on the job in a way. Today, we create a photo agency, a group of students at the ICP, and that was as part of a recommendation of one of our teachers. And so the agency was called Veraz Images. I did it with another group of photographers. And we existed for 4 years. We were based in New York, and we were very successful. We did a few commissions, collective works. We signed big contracts with other agencies across Europe and the US, etc. So there was a lot of commitment and success coming out of the agency. And that's something that someone in our school recommended. And also at the end of the programs, there is an exhibition with the works of the students. And there is a big community of important editors and galleries that, you know, people from the art world invited. So you have also that exposure as well.
Yes. I was going to ask you, I was going to save this question for the end, but I'm going to ask it now because you just mentioned exhibitions. What's the difference for you between exhibiting your work to the public in a physical location versus online?
I've done exhibitions that never meant to happen. For example, I did a project in Nepal with a group of Nepali women. If it was a long-term project, it was exhibited around the world, and it was actually very successful because, you know, it touched all the possibilities from magazines to museum to gallery to publications to books. But I started this project with the goal to make a photo exhibition in the country, in Nepal. And due to, like, government restrictions, that never happened. So I didn't manage to do it. But a couple of years ago, a group of artists, actually a photographic NGO in Nepal contacted me. They were doing the second edition of what's called the Photo Kathmandu Festival, which is an international Asian photographic festival, where they invite people from all over the world and artists working on Asia issues to exhibit. And I was invited for that. So I actually, this exhibition ended up happening. And I was invited to go there and see it for myself. And it was very emotional for me because my subjects, this woman came to see this exhibition 5 years later. I reestablished connection with them. I got to see the reactions to having their stories shown to the public. I sometimes sit down in front of my beaches as another tourist and watching how people were taking selfies and talking about it, locals. And for me, it was really exciting because this project was about that, was about inspiring local people with these women's stories and showing them something that to me was fascinating, which was women breaking stereotypes in Nepal. So that exhibition was particularly, it was a goal for me. But it was a challenge for many, many years. So there's nothing in comparison to show this work online or on a screen than to show it physically and live that experience.
Yeah. Is that the project that you worked on that you're most proud of? Broken Rules?
One of the most proud of, yes, absolutely. I work with art. So if that means being an artist, then I guess I am an artist. But I work with an art medium because the type of photography I do, I consider it an art.
So what's the difference between photography and art? And where is the border? When does photography become art? When is photography just photography? Do you see it like that? Or is that sort of making a caricature that's not accurate?
I guess it depends. Like if I take my photo in a machine, then it's just a photo of me. It's a flash, and there is no sense. There is no meaning behind that, just by documenting my face. To stamp it on a passport or something like that. This is a photograph, but there is nothing artistic about it. But when you have a meaning when there is a story behind the photo, and there is an intention by the person who has taken the photo, but also a dialogue with the subject of the photograph, and it could be a human or something else, then is when it turns into an art form. I guess that would be my definition.
So I'm very curious about this process that you have, where because you described it earlier during your talk, the process where you go about developing a story idea on a huge topic like human rights, or, and sometimes it's an assignment, sometimes it's a personal project, right? You do both. So how, I mean, it's a lot of research that goes into it. You just said it, when you have, you mostly photograph people, so you have to find out about the person, spend time doing research into who these people are and how to represent their story. But could you give us another example, or maybe use some of the examples you've talked about already, about how one goes about developing a story on a huge topic? And how do you start? How do you bring it to a conclusion? I don't know if that question even makes sense, but you know what I mean? Because my question was about climate change, but then I don't want to force you into that topic if you don't want to talk about climate change. But how does the research process work for you?
Well, I can give you an example. I did a publication with Time Magazine in Laos a few years ago, and it came out of a different assignment. So I was in Laos for something else, Central Laos. And as part of my assignment, I met a Canadian expert on demining. So the story was about demining. And in this part of the country, there is sort of like a lot of tourists, but not that very many, who come to sort of like to places to just admire different types of bombs. So bombs becomes part of the tourist attraction, you know. And I was just having a conversation with this professional, this expert, one day. And I came back to home. At the time, home was in Cambodia. And it got me thinking that would be a very interesting story. So I started doing research about types of bombs, this part of the country in Central Laos, if there were other stories that were developed around the issue, if so, how they portrayed the story. So I have to sort of like start researching on every aspect of the story. And then when I was ready, I pitched it to a few magazines, one of them being Time Magazine, and they were interested in the story. So they sent me there. And I did the story, and it took me a while because, of course, I did a lot of interviews as well when I was there. So I was maybe following the story for a period of like 10 days or 2 weeks or something like that. Then I came back and I filed my photos as well as my interviews. And with a virtual journalist, we managed to do a publication. And it was the first time that an article says photos and text by Arantxa Cedillo, which makes me very proud, though I didn't really read the article. But I did all the research. And that was an interesting process, because it was the sort of like the idea. And then once the idea develops, then you have to make it happen, right? So then you have to follow all the research, make sure this idea, if it has been developed before, find a new angle. And then use the resources and find the contacts and, you know, try to make it a real project, a real story for it. So,
and it involves finding, I loved when you were talking about fixers earlier. You know, you need to set yourself up with a fixer, and either by being in a place for a long time and then you find your own fixer, or you depend on an agency to find your fixer for you. So here it's sort of similar in the sense that you have to look for people to help you along the way, the virtual journalist, and you have to pitch it to someone. So you're sort of, you're sort of there, throwing lines to people almost, right? And then it sort of moves along.
Exactly, and there is a lot of research elements. There is this photographer I love. Her name is Taryn Simon. She's an American photographer.
We talked about her in class.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And she always says that, you know, 90% of her work is just research, mm-hmm. and only 10% or 15% of it is photographic work. Mm-hmm. So that's how important it is.
Mm-hmm. And getting permissions to access for Absolutely. Her, right? I mean, I don't know for you also, but she has this hurdles to cross, right? Getting permission to access places that people have never seen or photographed before.
Oh, yes, I've done that. And yeah. I have to even hire translators to get me letters translated into Vietnamese or whatever it is to mm-hmm. be able to access to certain places. Mm-hmm. It takes months sometimes. Yeah.
Can you tell us what the hardest place that you've accessed is?
I could use the example of some human rights work that I did in a drug rehabilitation center in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. That was a very long bureaucratic process mm-hmm. that has to follow very different governmental institutions, a lot of letters and exchanges until I got the permission to access to it.
The one in the drug center?
Yes.
So the one that's on YouTube? There's a little video?
Probably.
I did my research, you see. For Human Rights Watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an amazing project. So I just wanted to ask you about ethics, because I know you've trained people in using media in an ethical manner. And so you seem to be very active in your role in educating people, you know, to use media ethically, especially since you and so many others represent vulnerable populations.
Depending on the location you are, mm-hmm. depending if you're working on your own for mm-hmm. a project or you're working for an organization, mm-hmm. or if you're working with organizations to develop your own idea. Whenever there is an institution involved, there mm-hmm. is always a process. Mm-hmm. But even myself, when I work with subjects, I have my own agreements forms, consent forms, mm-hmm. To make sure that they understand what they're being involved in mm-hmm. and the public attention they will receive mm-hmm. and the media aspect of it.
Right.
So for me, it's actually incredibly important. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because I worked for a large organization, which I won't mention, back in Cambodia. And I signed contract with them for a long period, but I was very curious to learn that they never used consent forms in the past. So I agreed to continue working with them unless they use them, otherwise I'll break my contract, because it is always very important to me that the person I photograph mm-hmm. know what's happening mm-hmm. and they have to agree to the exposure they will receive afterwards. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then we cannot take the photos. And some photographers might think that then they are invading sort of like the natural aspect of going to a place and photograph, mm-hmm. Creating instant photographs of the moments that are happening. But there are ways to work around it. Mm-hmm. You can do the photo first and then you can ask after, mm-hmm. or the other way around. Mm-hmm. And you can still get the results you want. But you have, in my opinion, you have to do it correctly and inform people.
Mm. But do you think things are moving forward in the sense of people are getting more and more aware of the need to protect the vulnerable? I mean, the children, for example. I mean, to take an example of pregnant women, children, disabled people, refugees, you know, are people getting more aware of the need to protect them?
Protect them from what?
I mean, protect them in the sense of, you know, making them understand, having them sign something.
Yeah, and I hope it goes to everyone, not simply vulnerable people. I still think that everyone mm-hmm. deserves the opportunity to be informed of what's happening. So I won't only talk about vulnerable people, I will mm-hmm. include every single one. Mm-hmm. Every single person has the right to know what's happening. Yes.
Sure. You've won many photo awards. It's very impressive. And can you mention one of these as of particular interest in the sense that it's opened many doors for you in your career? I don't know. I was just sort of curious to know, because there's so many on this list, but mm-hmm. maybe one has been of particular importance to you.
Well, of course, I always go back to like the first one, mm-hmm. the first international award that I got was sponsored by the Sunday Times magazine. It's called the Ian Parry Scholarship in the UK. And it was a significant award for me because it gave me the exposure. It opened a lot of doors. I was officially presented at Visa pour l'Image that year in Perpignan. I received digital equipment sponsored by Canon, which I didn't own at that time because was only shooting analog photography at that period. So it gave me the materials to work. It also offered me a grant to continue with a project that I proposed to them. And that was the continuation of the health system. I was I document the health system in the US, and I propose to do a comparison with the health system in Canada. So that allows me to move to another country. That was the next place where I lived for a few years, and work on a project sponsored by this award. So it opened many, many doors. It gave me a continuation of the type of work when I wanted to do, and from that on, other opportunities came. So it was an incredible achievement. And it also, the Ian Parry is very special because creates community. And the list of artists that have won that award is really impressive. And we're always in contact, and we are, we help each other. So it's actually something very unique.
What are you working on now?
My next project is on alternative photography processes, which is my sort of like my new thing. I'm very excited to go back to my original roots, to spend hours in the darkroom, and to explore the magic again. And not necessarily smelling the chemicals. They're very strong chemicals that I'm using at the moment, but it's fascinating to go back to an experimental phase. So yeah, that's my new adventure.
And do you have any advice for young photographers starting out art school today, photography school?
Well, I would say to them, you know, you have to work hard, put yourself a lot of expectations and big challenges, and explore things. You might think you might end up being somewhere that you can imagine now, but it could go in a completely different direction and still be fascinating, as long as you do the work that you believed in and work really hard. That's very important. But sort of like follow your dreams and go for them, and they will take you to completely different directions every time, but it's still gonna be interesting, I hope.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.